From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host at the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, ever-cape-wearing, ever-the-heart-throb of Bob After Dark, my friend, my producer, my pseudo-boss in the Bob After Dark world, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
I wouldn't go that far. Hey, Bob, how's
you
it going?
You were kind of like my pseudo-boss, though.
Well, explain, how so?
You control the soundboards. If I come to you with too much of a risque topic, you come to me.
Risque topic?
Yeah, if I have a risque topic, you're like, don't do that. You know, you have a say-so. You bring guests in.
We're on at 9 p.m. There's nothing too risque for 9 p.m. But yes,
you're right. I highly doubt. I'm sure, you know, the big corporate overlord, Jed, probably knocking... Don't be doing that.
I think riskier things sometimes happening in the morning show, too. So, but yes, welcome.
I've been on the morning show. I know how that could go.
Oh, Bob. You were a bad boy on the morning show, weren't you? Very bad boy, Bob.
Moving on. How are you?
I'm doing good, Bob. How about you? How have you been lately?
Oh, man. That's a weird question. We're going to skip that. I've been tired. That's the realistic
answer.
Well,
Bob, are you getting enough sleep? My question.
No,
you know,
I am not.
As a vampire, I get enough sleep.
I
How
do
about
not.
You?
Absolutely not. You balance 8, 9, 10 things at once, and then one day you wake up and you're like, oh, it's 3 days later. You know, I'm tired, but it's okay. It could be a lot worse.
Well, Bob, I know you were in a makeup chair all evening here, and all cosmetics and everything, so you're ready to go, and you look like you're ready for another episode. But you know, I'm very eager for this episode, Bob.
Why is that?
Well, because we're talking about. Well, we shouldn't get into it. It's too early to get into it right now, Bob. But
it's something like
our
that.
Subject matter is pretty good tonight. I have to say.
Yeah.
Not that it's not good every night.
I was going to say, what's the problem with every other night?
I'm just saying this one should be a dandy right here.
A what?
A dandy,
like the flower?
Right, like a dandy of a show, a Cracker Jack show. A Cracker Jack show. A good show. Gangbusters, you know?
Boy.
Are these old 1950s terms, I guess.
I appreciate that. Yeah, we're going to have to use the old 1950s voice tonight on the show.
You know, that's how they used to sound the radio, that
yes.
kind of voice right there.
After this, the Fireside Chats with the President... Who did the Fireside Chats?
FDR.
FDR, yeah. The Fireside Chats with FDR.
Oh, well, Bob, you could do Fireside Chats.
Listen, someday, when we get that YouTube channel launched and ready, we'll do a Fireside Chat. I'll have a smoking jacket on, and I'll read a quick spooky tale or two.
Do you happen to have a fireplace, Bob?
I do not, but I have an electric one.
That's
one
a fireside.
One of the heaters, okay. But it shows like the, you know, the not the faux flame underneath.
That should work. It's a fireside.
Yeah.
You're chatting. So you're good to go.
Yeah, I just need a good like crushed purple velveteen like smoking jacket.
We could arrange that. I'm sure just go online and we could get you one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now Count, the audience is going to be very, very, very angry if I don't ask you what your weekend update is.
What did I do my weekend? It was pretty low key for the most part as we enter as we're filming this in the Chicagoland area, Northwest Indiana. Winter is starting to break here for the most part, so the count is looking forward.
Says who? We got snow yesterday.
Well, beside that yesterday, this is the official last week of the winter solstice, where the veil is at its thinnest. But as we enter...
There's many things wrong with that, with what you just said, but we're not going to correct it. It's fine.
As we enter into the spring months here, and it, you know, things are a little warmer, the count's looking back. Looking forward to get back out there into the open air, walking around, doing some outdoor activities, and maybe actually having a good weekend schedule to tell you about as far as the weekends go.
But did you watch anything fun?
Did I watch anything fun? Did I watch? I can't say I did, Bob.
Okay.
I didn't watch anything fun.
Did you watch the Cecil Hotel doc like I was telling you to last week?
Bob, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it for you. I'm going to watch it.
But did you watch
it? I did not watch
it. Okay, then so you failed.
Well, wait,
I gave you homework. I gave you homework. I'm like, you should probably watch this.
I should watch it. I'll watch it.
Yes.
Where do I find it at again, Bob?
It's Netflix.
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 I need your account. If you
don't say that out loud. They're cracking down on that.
What's your password?
Well, we'll talk after
okay,
the show.
We'll talk afterwards.
Do you not have a Netflix account in 2020?
I haven't had it. You know, it's been a couple years.
Okay, moving on. Would you like to know my weekend update?
Sure, Bob. How was your weekend?
I went on a hike through the woods.
It was a good Saturday. Weekend for that.
That was gorgeous.
What woods did you go to?
The woods.
Oh, the woods.
The woods.
The woods.
Yeah.
Wow. The woods where you had
My some experiences.
Yeah.
So went out there. It was a good time. Did that. And then Sunday was spent all day just kind of recuperating from a very long week. And now here I am on Tuesday. I had to forget what day today was.
Tough.
But no, Sunday was spent. I've been working on a top secret Bob After Dark project.
Top secret.
Top secret.
I don't even know about it.
You kind of know about
it. Oh, do I?
It's a top of the line secret Bob After Dark project. Huh. So I spent a good chunk of Sunday working on that and then prepping for the show this week and getting the other episode up in podcast land. And because right now the schedule for the podcast episodes is they're edited and upload on Sundays for you guys to have the it ready for your commuter week ahead. Because we used to upload Fridays, but I felt like if it uploaded on a Friday, by the time Monday rolled around, when most people listen to the show, I think they're listening on commutes. Mm. So when the commuters are waking up Monday morning to get ready to go to work, and then the show's up and running. So yeah, I got to get the show ready. I got to get the show ready for the week. It's,
You used to upload on a Friday, which is like when people were going to the clubs.
The clubs.
And they were listening to Bob After Dark while heading to the club. But this is a better idea, I think.
I guess.
For the work week.
I don't think there's many club be-goings during the pandemic, so.
Well, somebody's clubbing out there somewhere.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
All right. So that's it.
Yeah. On your journey into the woods, I know in the past you had some experiences. How was this journey? Was it pretty normal?
About as normal as you can get from the Cook County Forest Preserve. That place is really weird. It's a never-ending, just weird. That whole place has like a vortex above it, man. It's wild.
Were you able to get some mac and cheese?
I did not.
Oh, too bad.
No, I did not get any mac and cheese.
It's been a while since you had that mac and cheese.
Oh my God, that's the Hyatt mac and cheese.
They're still serving it? If I just go into a Hyatt right now and get some mac and cheese, can I do that?
I think it's only... Listen, I've been in many a Hyatt. Hyatt, by the way, if you're looking to sponsor a show, hit it up. No, I don't think they did the... I'm sure that any Hyatt does, but that's particular one. It's Starbucks mac and cheese.
Mm.
It's weird. Anyway, if this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, this is the show where we talk about legends, lore, and the supernatural. Things that go bump in the sky... Things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, and weird bits of weird.
Well, there could be bumping in the sky, Bob.
There could be bumping in the sky. Yeah. You know, if the aliens are listening to something with some heavy bass, they're bumping
they're clubbing in the sky.
I get you.
Yeah.
No, so this is the show where we talk about all those things, and Count Panic sometimes comes in with absolutely no knowledge of what we're talking about.
Pretty much every day.
Has there ever been a time when we went into a show and you knew the topic, and you're like, I'm going to chime in here.
No, I want to open.
Other than me, like, forcefully telling you. When we did the Christmas Carol episode the year before last, when we had Steve and Anthony on.
Yeah.
And we did the Christmas Carol, and Steve looked at me like a deer in headlights when he forgot his part.
Well, I think a lot of times, you know, people come in here, and they want to have an open mind of what you have to say. So our minds are working overtime as you explain what's going on here.
Yeah.
We like it that way. We like to think a little bit.
Well... Either way, I was welcome to Bob After Dark.
Okay, happy to be here.
Yep. So we split the show up into two parts. First part of the show, we talk about weird, spooky news of the week. This is where you, the fans, submit news articles to me to read on the show. I give a little dialogue about it. And of course, we get the hashtag Panic's Take, where we get Panic's Take on the news story in the full, unedited, raw version of it.
In the news story, I have no clue what's going on. See, the topic, you posted a topic.
I get you,
news stories, I don't know anything.
No. These are ones we get from the fans. Or this week, I got my own news stories this week.
Okay.
Because they were three stories that really, really stood out to me. And I was like, that's kind of cool.
All right.
So this week, we're doing that.
All right. So I can't wait.
You ready to split that up?
First time I hear it.
All right. So our first story actually comes to us from Coast to Coast AM.
No, the show that's on at midnight.
The show that's on after Bob After Dark on Tuesday nights. Yeah. Fun fact. Yeah. I am the headliner for Coast to Coast. Brief summary. Coast to Coast is the kind of quintessential paranormal radio show. It's been around forever, hosted by Art Bell beginning, and now we have George Norrie hosting it. It's there live every night from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Eastern, and it's just, it's a really, really good show. It's fantastic. They cover all kind of bits of weird news and stuff, and, you know, Coast to Coast, if you're listening to this right now, I'm looking to be a guest. That would be my dream come true.
But didn't we have somebody recently?
We had two, had two guests on Bob After Dark that have made it to Coast to Coast. Kitsy Duncan.
Yes.
And Joe Diamond.
Joe Diamond.
Joe Diamond was just on Coast to Coast last week. I was so stoked when I heard that for him.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. Well, yeah. Bob, there's nothing stopping us.
No, we'll get there. George, if you're listening, you know how to contact me.
It's pretty easy.
All right, so this first story comes to us from Coast to Coast, and it's actually more of a PSA than a news article. Mm. All right. So in what ought to be a cautionary tale for soothsayers and occultists with a penchant for home decor, a crystal ball is being blamed for a fairly sizable fire that erupted in Wisconsin residents. The odd incident reportedly occurred last week in the community of Delton, where the owners of a house had kept a classic divination tool atop of their table in their living room. Their decision was to display the crystal ball in a precise spot. However, proved to be a big mistake, as it just so happened to be the path of direct sunlight streaming through some windows, leading to a disastrous chain of events. And so, like the scene of a cartoon, when the sun's rays peered through the psychic instrument like last Monday afternoon, their intensity was magnified into a fine point that was cast onto a nearby couch, which was subsequently burst into flames. In a Facebook post detailing a strange turn of events, the Delton Fire Department included that the inferno was fortunately contained to just that room, although the main home of the floor was impacted and considerable heat generated by the fire. All told, the blaze was estimated to cost $250,000 in damages. And as one might just imagine, you know, some people may crack a couple jokes about the unfortunate, you know, event. Don't crack a joke about this. It's not funny. Guys, this is just a quick PSA before I pass it over to Count Panic, because I'm looking at the damage that this crystal ball did, and their home was gorgeous. They had a lot of really cool occulty artifacts in there and decor. So quick, just FYI, folks, you know, for our witchy audience and just for the people that collect the decor, if you're going to put something like that out, keep an eye on it, because that stuff can actually happen. And a crystal ball or a divination mirror, if reflecting from sunlight, can start a fire. It's a definite possibility, like we just saw here in Wisconsin. So that's just a quick PSA from me, and unfortunate end of this story. Hashtag panic state.
Well, there's nothing paranormal here. Like, I know there was a crystal ball and some other oddities there as well, but this is just common science. The reflection started a fire. We're not chalking this one up to supernatural things going on.
You know, if we had Steve here, he would have chimed in with a little, "Oh, that's just science, Bob. You know how that goes. You reflect light from some glass, and the glass is going to radiate onto a surface. And if the surface is flammable, you're going to cause it to smoke. Nothing supernatural about it," says the Steve, if he was here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible. It definitely is that there might be some sort of supernatural force, but I don't want to buy into that. This is a tragedy. This is a terrible, terrible thing.
The crystal
ball reflection. Folks, if you're going to display these things, which I have a lot of my goods and my artifacts are stored too. And I think I just saw James in the chat chime in and say that there was that he keeps his in a box until he needs it. That's fine. I'm all about it. I 100% think you should buy things that interest you. And if they're related to your religion or related to your interest, whatever it is, all about it. But you got to be careful where you put these things, because you can easily start a fire.
No, yeah. But yeah, that's the thing. It's tricky. Because you wouldn't think the crystal ball you're displaying is gonna cause a fire, but I guess
you don't think about that as it's happening. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have, because the first thing, well, no, because cats would have knocked that thing over if it would have been on a coffee table. But, you know, I wouldn't have thought about that. In fact, when I heard about the story, when I saw it on the Coast to Coast article, I was like, yikes, man, that sucks. And I thought about it. I'm like, that could have been a mistake that I would have done with a crystal ball of in my possession, because I wouldn't have thought about that, to be completely honest with you. So that's something that could happen to any witch, you know, practicing person. It's just interested in that kind of realm of decor or in their lifestyle, whatever it might be. So just be careful.
PSA right there.
That's a good PSA. This next one actually is breaking news as of today. The Amityville Horror killer Ronald Defoe dies today. Ronald, the convicted killer credited with the spawning of the infamous Amityville Horror poltergeist case, reportedly died in police custody late last week. The monstrosity's tale began back in 1974 when he murdered both of his parents as well as his four siblings in their home in New York. Although Defoe's defense attorney tried to convince the jury that his client was truly insane at the time of the slayings, the strategy proved unconvincing, and he was ultimately sentenced to 25 years to life in a New York State prison. While the incident alone was undeniably nightmarish, what caused the case to find a place in paranormal history were the events that occurred when a new family moved into the home where the murders took place. A little over a year after the family met their tragic demise, George and Caitlin Lutz, along with their three children, took up residence in the home, which is actually still contains some of the furniture belonging to the murdered family. Shortly thereafter, the Lutzes allegedly began experiencing all manner of frightening paranormal activity, including ectoplasmic slime oozing out of walls, furniture that moved around, and objects that are levitated. That's a famous book, The Amityville Horror. We'll do an episode about that. Pat somewhere just heard me say that from Ghostly, and he's like, that's a skeptic's jungle gym right there, because they debunked a lot of stuff from that that case. But it's one of the most famous cases in the world of the paranormal. It really is. I would argue that the Amityville Horror House is probably top five paranormal cases of all time. And this killer, Ronald, that was what some say triggered it, or what have you. So, you know, this real life figure that was involved with this big case and what could have been a trigger with a lot of things, he died in custody. So, right. Hashtag bearing stake.
Now, you got to fill me in here about the house itself. Is the house have inhabitants in it just yet, or is it people living in that house?
I don't know. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I have not kept up with the case in years. You know, you learn the story, and there's the famous photo with the boy by the staircase.
Yes.
That's been rumored to be debunked and not to be debunked. There, you know, you get the idea of the case. I don't know if anybody is living in that house currently. I believe they are, because I think the house is still standing. Maybe when I'm reading the next news article, you could bring that up in a quick Google search for me so I can keep doing the show. But it's a famous paranormal case. We'll do an episode about it soon.
All right, because I'm just curious, like, why, if somebody is living there, they're obviously living there because they know what it's all about, and they get a kick out of living somewhere like that. Because normal person would buy a house where a famous murder took place. At least I wouldn't, Bob. Maybe
people pay a ton of money to live in those kinds of houses.
Great.
The Conjuring house, you know, people live there, and they're opening it up as like a paranormal bed and breakfast type of deal where you go and you rent it out for the night and you do paranormal investigations. There's people that really, really enjoy going to those kind of sites and like living there, you know. But in this case, I'm sure. Absolutely.
Now I got to ask you, Bob.
Yeah, hit me, Cal.
I know you like visiting haunted houses. Would you want to live in a haunted house?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think, you know, it's we talk about this sometimes where it's like you can ask the real estate agent if the house is haunted and they have to tell you like yes or no.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be the first question I'd ask when it's time to buy my first house. It's like, is it haunted? I don't know if I want it. I don't know. I'd have to have a house where it is where it's, you know, just kind of haunted, I guess. I feel like I'd be lonely in the house without some sort of spirit kicking around, or spirits, plural. You know, we'll see. Just kind of go from there. We have a caller on the line before I move on to the next article. I think Count's got a couple phone calls in there, but we'll see.
Yeah, you know what? We got the phone lines racked up right now. First, First, we got to go in order. We got John on the line here.
Hey, John, you're on the air.
Hey, Bob, I just passed your studio up. I was going to park in the lot and put the brights on, but I didn't want to disrupt you there.
You know, when the summer rolls around, John, we've been talking about for years for fans to come out by our studio window and hold up signs a la Today Show. So maybe we'll do that in the summer.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. Yeah, be careful because you know what? There's police all up and down the boulevard pulling people over.
Oh, I'm sure it's the St. Patrick's Day, so absolutely. There's only water in this cup, folks.
Starting early.
Yeah, I'm going over the bridge now. But anyway, crystal balls.
Yeah.
You know, people that go to these crystal ball readers and psychics, obviously they're believers. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I believers are people at least that are interested. I don't want to say morbid curiosity, but curiosity nonetheless. It's, oh, I've seen these in movies. I've heard about them on TV. There are psychics that do parties like, bunco parties for the people that do like bunco, or if they do like a monthly, like neighborhood watch meeting, they'll hire psychics for parties and stuff like that. So yeah, no, that's believers and non-believers hire them because it's a part of pop culture as it is like a, an occulty thing as well.
So are they really visioning something in the crystal ball or, they can't be making something up, right? I mean, because if I go to, if I'm a believer and I want to hear what they got to say within, either in my future or that, then, I guess, how does that work? Does, do you believe what they say after you leave or is it a 50-50 thing or?
I think it depends on who you go and see, John. I mean, I have been around psychics, it's kind of, we go hand in hand in this career path. I've been around psychics that try to get a cold reading off of me when I do some sort of reading. I've had psychics chase me around convention hall saying, you really need a cleansing because there's something attached to you. That happened at the last show I was at. Fun fact, I was there and the psychic followed me around saying, I will give you a discount. And I turned to him and I said, I'm okay, pal. I'm very well aware of what's hanging around me. So it just depends. You know, some of these people, even in like the mentalist world, they're very good at what they do, which is great. They're great at reading body language. They're able to pick up on cold calls, which is like, hey, I'm going to make very generalized statements to try to trigger something within you. And then I'm going to, I'm going to play off of that. I don't want to debunk the entire psychic community because I do know there's legitimate people out there that are gifted. And it's a belief I have at least. So it just depends who you're speaking to. There's frauds and everything. You might have a fraud doing a paranormal radio show once a week. You never know.
No, I don't think so. I'm a believer in that for sure.
Well, thank you
so
much.
Have a happy St. Patrick's Day and tell your dad if he's not listening, I said hi, okay?
Certainly will. John, thanks for calling in.
All right, we'll see you.
Absolutely. Who else do we have on the line?
Keep it rocking and rolling. We got a man of science on the phone, Steve Michaels.
Steve Michaels, my brother, my dear friend.
Oh, hey there, Bob. How's it going?
Going good, Steve. You're on the road. I'm thinking in Louisville right about now, yeah?
Yeah, just got into a bit of a bar fight.
Are you okay?
I'm good. You should you should see the other guy.
I've heard that before.
We took care of our business. The LOB had some problems but we took care of it our way.
That's good. That's the only way you can handle it. What's on your mind tonight, Steve? We miss you on the show.
I miss you. It feels like I haven't seen you in forever. You know, it's been a minute. So,
yeah.
I heard my name and, let's give everybody a little bit of, pull the curtain back.
Sure. We pull the curtain back.
You and I have a deal where if I have any big announcements to make, I will always make it on your show first before I do any other show or podcast or whatever. This is one of those instances, Bob.
Oh, what am I hearing?
So, Ohio Valley Wrestling, which I am a part of, is just signed with Fight TV starting this week at Thursday, Thursday at 7.
That's great. Congratulations.
Thank you. So now everybody, no matter where you're at, you can watch us every Thursday at 7 Eastern, I believe it is, on Fight TV. You can get on Roku. You can get it on Amazon Prime. You can, I believe Comcast has the app through Xfinity. So anybody that's around, they can now officially watch Steve Michaels no matter where they're at. So you're welcome.
Wow. And if you don't know, you should know.
They should know.
You know, you could buy Steve Michaels merch at prowrestlingtees.com/ChicagoBearHug.
My man, you memorized that, and I appreciate it.
You know, it's funny, folks. If you watch Steve on OVW this week, you might actually see something he's wearing that's relevant to the show tonight.
Yeah, you know, I messaged Bob before I went out and got into a little fight. But I'm repping the Bob After Dark t-shirt tonight. So if when you watch on Thursday, you'll be able to see Bob's favorite co-host of all time, Steve Michaels, wearing a Bob After Dark shirt on international television.
Wow.
So,
you know, Steve, before I let you go, you were hearing the bit, I'm sure, about the crystal ball and the heat passing and the light passing to create things like that. Did I nail that on the head with my scientific explanation? Did I do good on that?
You did. I mean, I'm an expert on heat, and that is that you did a great job, Bob. So hats off to you for explaining the science of things when, you know, we're thousands of miles apart, but sometimes at heart it just feels like we're just feet from each other. So I just want to keep doing what you're doing. I'm gonna hang up, listen to you, get back on the road. But have a good show tonight.
Thank you.
Stay out of the sun.
I will do that, Steve. Congrats once again. Fight TV.
Fight TV. That's great. Congratulations, Steve Michaels, wherever you are in the world. We appreciate you. We have another caller?
No.
Oh, you said the calls were racking up. We had
two calls back to back.
I remember we've had nights where we've had 10 callers in a row.
Bob, two. You got to take them as they come, Bob.
I'm proud of the two calls. Our phone numbers of guys, you can call in anytime throughout the show, make Panic do some work. 219-845-1100.
How about that?
You can call in and say hi.
Call in
and share a paranormal experience, if you will.
Also, I know Missy was chiming in here. They remodeled the house and got rid of the creepy windows. They changed the address, too. I guess you could do that.
Thank you, Missy, for chiming in and sharing that information, because I'm assuming you didn't Google it.
I was taking phone calls. Wow, how can I Google and take
two
phone
buttons,
calls
Count Panic. Hey, thanks for calling WJOB. Okay, so let's move on to our last news story of the week, and this one's actually from Popular Mechanics.
Oh, hold on here, Bob.
Yeah.
This is not a mechanical show. We don't discuss cars here.
No, but the thing they're discussing can completely change the course of not just human life, not just like life in general, the whole course of the universe, the whole of everything.
Do tell.
So I found this story actually through another podcast fan group, the Hysteria 51 podcast.
Okay.
I'm in their little, like the Children of the Night, their fan page, and so they shared this. And I couldn't make too much heads or tails about what this thing does, but there is something called a Dyson sphere that is saying could bring humans back from the dead, researchers are saying. This is, again, directly from Popular Mechanics. This cosmic megastructure may be the key to resurrection and immortality. And pretty much what this is the it's this device that's basically sitting up in space that's able to reverse the polarities of time that they're trying to build. And this thing may be a potential thing that could reverse time of a person and bring them back from the dead.
Being in this car, that
it's this it, the best way I could describe future? The best way I could describe the Dyson this Dyson thing. It's like a bunch of like a flower petals kind of leaning up.
Okay.
And in the center, it's just giant empty void. And the idea is that you could put somebody in there, and it reverses polarity of death.
What's the science backing this up here? Explain this, Bob.
Listen,
there's got to be some more to this story here.
I'm working on it. This concept, it's supposed to be reversing polarities pretty much to like reverse time and aging and
So I could
death
go,
itself.
This is the fountain of youth, essentially here, Bob. I could, if I step with this thing, I could go back in time if I really wanted to. I just could. Time could be at a standstill if I really wanted to as well. Correct?
Yes.
Interesting. How many people know about this?
It's up there.
Oh.
Okay. So. How to describe this in three steps, okay?
Okay.
It's the creation of a digital replica of ourselves will also require this Dyson Sphere, a megastructure that will help harness the energy of the sun. Researchers say that we currently don't have the technology to build such a structure, but nanobots might be able to do so in the future. Scientists have raised the question of whether or not a digital resurrection is actually feasible. Even if the technology was there, is much that shapes a person's development beyond data and records. So the idea is that you're recreating somebody digitally.
Okay. So that's proves a little more, because I thought maybe just get in there.
It's not like, I'm sorry, I should have explained it a little better. It's not like Crisis on Infinite Earths, the comic book where, you know, they're carrying Supergirl or something, or, you know, Barry Allen dies and I'm going to put you in this, or the Ra's al Ghul's, like, you know,
Lazarus Pit.
Yeah. It's not like that, but it's this concept that digitally recreates a person, all the memories, all the, you know, emotions, the feels, the characteristics, the gimmicks, the everything, right?
Hmm.
And this digital reconstruction of a person is going to basically move freely amongst people. And it's this Dyson sphere is going to be made up of nanobots that are going to make up a person after they're gone. A digital reconstruction.
Well, that makes way more sense there, Bob. I'm glad.
I'm sorry I didn't explain it better.
No, you're good. Well, that's interesting because, you know, everybody always talks about, man, if I could find the fountain of youth. Even if something like this, I think this is something that would be a pretty big if open to the public there, Bob. People are always craving to get younger. People are always craving to stay the current age they are right now. Nobody wants to age gracefully, I guess, anymore, Bob. Oh, well.
You want my opinion?
What's that, Bob?
No!
You don't want to get younger?
Well, I mean, that sounds nice, but count... There is a, I don't want to say a beauty in death, but it's the way it is. It's the circle of life, serpent and the rainbow, two sides of a coin. You know, there is a journey you have to go on. And if you're not in that journey, you're not, you know, of mortal being, a mortal essence. You know, whatever your afterlife beliefs are or lack thereof, you still have to make that journey. It's something we all have to, maybe not you, because you're immortal.
I am. I've been around for a long time.
But the concept of recreation of a person, maybe because it's a digital copy, but, you know, then you get into the philosophical discussion of, is what you're creating going to have a soul? Are we creating replicants from Blade Runner? And that's pretty much what they're saying they're creating.
But what about immortality, Bob? That does not tickle your fancy a little bit?
No!
The immortal Bob Anderson.
Listen, yes, I am immortal in my own ways. You'll be hearing my voice for centuries to come when you're listening to Bob After Dark on repeat.
Isn't that something, too? Think about that, too. People could listen to this long after you're long gone, Bob.
And that's good. My legacy carries on. I am not forgotten. That's the goal. That's the plan. Don't be forgotten.
All right.
That's my plan. Don't be forgotten. That's what I want. Leave a legacy.
Nobody's forgetting you, Bob.
Nobody's going to forget me.
No.
But I don't want to get brought back. Absolutely not. You know, we talk about a monkey's paw and things like that in the occult world. You know, you bring somebody back, you don't want to know what happens. When you start digitally recreating people from the body, from the ground up, and you're running around with nanobots and 3D printing humans with the same thoughts and emotions, you're creating replicants. And then you're going to make Blade Runner. And we all know how that ends. Which is good, because I love Blade Runner, one of my favorite movies of all time. But that's the point. You shouldn't mess with the mysteries of the universe like that. And what happens to us when we're gone and stuff. Right. Yeah. That's a journey we have to make. I don't know. What about you? You about this? Do you
I told you. We brought it up. I lived through centuries, Bob, and I could say could be nice. Can't be nice.
Now the concept of harnessing your subconscious and uploading it to some sort of like database? Sure. I'll buy into that. Really? But a physical reconstruction of a person, I don't know. It's like that, what's that Black Mirror episode? Is it San Jupiter? And I'm sure the Queen of the Night's screaming somewhere that I mispronounced it. But it's like the most famous episode of Black Mirror with Yorkie. She wears like the glasses and they upload their subconsciouses to like this network when they die.
Would you want that, Bob?
I don't know. That's a hit or a miss with me some days. I don't know if that's what I want when I go or not. Yeah, you get what I'm saying?
I get what you're laying down there, Bob.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sleep on it. Let me
it's
know.
It's not a terror. You know, you get to the point where it's like, well, is there an afterlife? If there is not, then I'm going to risk the nothing, the void. Or I could just get my subconscious uploaded, but then I'm going to be missing out on the actual afterlife things, and that's important.
I want to see
what the big nothing is. I want to know what's out there after this. Yeah. That's a journey I want to experience.
Yeah. Fair enough, Bob. We're getting pretty deep tonight here.
Yeah. Yeah. That news story. Thanks, Popular right. Mechanics, for bringing that to us, and thanks to Stereo 51 for having that on their fan page for us to read.
Yeah.
Yep. And then the other two were brought to us by Coast to Coast, our sister show. Our mother show, really.
Now, do you think tonight on Coast to Coast they're going to do a Bob After Dark story from Bob After Dark?
What are they going to cover?
What we were covering tonight.
They might. Considering I took two of their own stories to cover for the night.
But they might react to you covering their stories.
Very much.
Yeah. Never know.
Count, you ready for a cheers?
I got my cup right here. Sierra Mist.
We have a five-star review.
Five-star review.
Five-star review.
From who?
From She-Ra 1981.
She-Ra 1981.
She-Ra 1981.
She-Ra 1981.
That's the never-ending loop. She-Ra 1981 leaves us a five-star review saying, creepy and informative. Bob After Dark is creepy and informative. Bob has an awesome, smooth voice that just sets the tone. And Count Panic always puts a big smile on my face. I really enjoy the show and highly recommend it. It's nice to wind down after a stressful day with Bob and Count Panic. Thank you. Five stars. From She-Ra 1981.
She-Ra 1981.
So to you, She-Ra 1981. Count Panic raises his cup to you
as much
as I do. Mm-hmm. And a cheers to you for the five-star review, She-Ra. You are the featured children of the night, child of the night. I'm working on that. That's a working title.
The child of the night. Well, that singles them out. So I think that's a good one right now.
Yes, you are the child of the night, She-Ra 1981. Yeah. Thank you so much. Now, folks, do you want a cheers on Bob After Dark live with us? It's not hard.
No.
Go on the Apple Podcast website, leave a five-star review, say something very nice about me and Count, and say that you like it, because the good news, the more five-star reviews we get on the Apple, the more we fall in the algorithms, and the more I get a chance to do this for my full-time job, and I don't have to worry about not sleeping at night, about day job back here.
Get the full 8 hours, Bob.
Yeah, no. Let's get Bob doing this full time, please. So get your 5-star reviews, and of course the Bob After Dark Bernie Sanders meme. I am once again coming to you and asking you for your 5-star reviews. So get on over to Apple and She-Ra 1981. Thank you for enjoying the smooth voice.
I feel like you put on some extra smoothness
today. I did. Listen, you know, people, the fans of the show, the Children of the Night, they always point out, they're like, oh, your voice. Yeah, they always compliment the voice. And that makes me feel pretty good because I have a face for radio. So,
well, you brought me right before the show here, Bob. Again, I said I'm drinking Sierra Mist here. You said not the best thing to drink.
No, in the world of production, you're not supposed to drink something carbonated. You should know this.
I heard this, Bob. Now, why is the case? It never bothered me before.
The gases build up.
Oh,
you could have a slip up.
I'm a vampire.
All right. And folks, we're restructuring things right now on the back end. There is a Bob After Dark website coming. I know it's been delayed, just like everything else in the Bob After Dark universe. It's been delayed slightly, but when this launches, we're going to be launching with a store, hopefully. That's coming very soon with it, and you guys are going to get a chance to check everything out. The Bob After Dark email is going to be reopened very soon, bob@bobafterdark.com. I want to start hearing your paranormal, extraterrestrial, cryptids, odds, weirds, strange encounters, because I want to share these on the show and be able to get experiences from you, the fans, to for me to talk about and give you my own two cents and opinion about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, folks, when that's back up and running, you guys are going to be the first to hear, and that news will break first on the Children of the Night fan page, which you can find at, I think the URL is facebook.com/Children of the Night. If not, you could just search Children of the Night, or I link it on the Bob After Dark page. So you guys can join that and chat amongst your other fellow Children of the Night and the specific Child of the Night, She-Ra, 1981.
1981. Now, I think, too, when that website is up and running, Bob, we got to put that hotline number right on the front page, because I think that's something we should take more advantage of, that hotline number. Always a cool thing.
We're doing a new run of business cards this year, because we're getting back to conventions. I'll start having my own conventions, social distance.
BobCon.
Joke about BobCon. I'll tell you about after the show. But we're going to get some new business cards, and the business cards will have the hotline number on there, and we'll start sharing that a little bit more, because I forget we have it some days.
It's there.
You can call the Bob After Dark hotline and leave a paranormal thing.
Sure.
Absolutely.
I would do it.
Yeah.
But I got your direct number. So.
You could call me whenever you want. Call and be like, hey, Bob, I saw a ghost. And I'd be like, did you really? No, I just wanted to call you.
Sometimes it comes down like that, Bob. Sometimes it comes down like that.
Absolutely. Count, why don't we take a quick break?
Sure.
Because this ran a little longer than I expected, because I wanted to dive into the lore of the week a little earlier, but it's all good. Bob After Dark will be right back. Podcast fans, stick around, because you're going to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. And live fans, just stick around for a couple seconds, and we will be right back.
Hey, true believers and new believers. This is Dr. David Hickney. I am a PhD in cryptozoology from MIT, and I'm the host of Freak of the Week. What's Freak of the Week? It's a podcast where people can call in to talk about all the crazy creatures and phenomena that are out there. Join me, my co-host, Dr. Elizabeth Marin, who may or may not be my sister. Spoiler, she is my sister, as we discuss such amazing topics like the ghost of Dave Coulier, the lost city of Miami, aliens, feline warriors, and much, much more. Freak of the Week comes out every week, hence the name, on Fridays. See you then.
And we're back. Cop Panic. Hello.
Bob, how's it going?
It's going. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Bob. Can't complain here.
Now, what'd you do during break?
During the break, Bob, I poured myself some more carbonation right in this cup right here. But my voice is still silky smooth.
You kill our bit. You killed the bit. We're supposed to do something fun.
Well, that was. I really did. Right. I did actually do it. Well, Bob, you get it there. Okay, Bob, you want something? You want to know what I did during the break, Bob?
What'd you do during the break?
I went searching.
You went searching.
For a leprechaun.
For a leprechaun. I also went searching for a leprechaun.
Was that really your thing, Bob?
That was going to be my thing. Oh, you stole it.
Sorry.
Built one of those fun leprechaun traps. You know, that's where we're going to begin the lore of the week,
okay,
folks.
Yeah.
So, Count, back in your day when you were a wee lad, did you guys ever build leprechaun traps when you were in school? Like, and you set them up to try, and it would be like this, you know, whatever you build at home to try to catch like a leprechaun. Did you guys do that?
I can't say really which went out to catch the leprechauns. I think the Easter Bunny, we let out some Easter Bunny traps there, but leprechaun traps, not so much.
When I was in school, we built, you know, all the kids were assigned to build like a leprechaun trap. Something that we would use to, you know, the leprechaun to come and visit the school. It was like a, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I remember the one stands out in my head that my mom and dad helped me build out of like an old pretzel jar. And the idea was that it would go in, and we set out like these fake gold coins with like green Easter grass, and it would get it, and it would fall into the Easter grass
of course,
and get stuck
that
in there.
Makes sense.
I remember that like it was yesterday, but that always stood out to me. And as I got older, I was like, oh, what is a leprechaun? Right. And then you start studying the paranormal and the occult, and you're like, oh, good job, families and my elementary school teachers for wanting me to do these things. Because if you caught yourself a leprechaun, you actually have yourself a problem.
Now, Bob, before you continue on, I got to get in the spirit of this right here.
What are you putting on your face?
There we go.
What is that horrifying thing on your face?
Now, I'm sorry for people watching on the video, because this could probably induce some negative reactions in some folks. But I needed to get into the spirit, the mood of you talking about the leprechauns here.
If you didn't... If you didn't guess already, folks, it's the eve of St. Patrick's Day, so the night before St. Patrick's Day.
Yes.
And we're talking about probably the most famous fae creature of them all, because that is what inspires Fae Lore Month as a whole. It's St. Patrick's Day during the month of March, and this is what we're going to be talking about.
And I can't wait for it, Bob. I mean, leprechauns, who doesn't love a good leprechaun story? Where do they come from? What is their deal? What is the deal with leprechauns?
Oh, my God, have you become my Jerry Seinfeld?
I think so. These glasses are doing something to me right now.
Can you turn that light? It's distracting me from my end of the window.
You know, the light doesn't go off by itself. I can't turn the light off, so it'll have to go off by itself.
Can you just take them off?
I guess I could do that, Bob.
Oh, boy.
Look how beautiful those look.
God.
$5. Right there.
You look like the people I used to see when we used to march at the St. Patrick's Day parades. Those things were popping. Man, I miss parades.
You miss cons and you miss parades.
I do. All right. So leprechauns are a type of fairy, though it is important to note that they aren't, you know, the serial chasing type. No, in fact, they are dangerous if provoked. According to Irish folklore, they can be lustful, nasty creatures whose magic can delight you one day and kill you the next. If you are in contact with one, do not displease them. They will make the slightest issue a fight for your life. Often depicted as a wizard-bearded short folk wearing green, some of the earliest actually show leprechauns depicted in red. Their history can date back to the 18th century. Some say that they were created when water spirits, known as the Lutrapon, meaning small body, kind of merged with the common mischievous house spirits to create what we now know as leprechauns. And the earliest form of leprechaun inhabitants actually were to haunt cellars and steal the owner's booze from their cellars. Some say that the word leprechaun comes from the term leith shragan, meaning shoemaker. Because in the world of leprechaun and fae lore, the leprechaun's job they would do as their, you know, their occupation is leprechauns would actually make shoes. Are you doing okay over there?
I'm looking at my glasses right now, Bob.
Why are you staring at those things? I'm getting distracted by you, like, being mesmerized by your glasses.
Shoemakers, though, Bob. They were shoemakers.
There are many tales of the leprechaun's treachery. One tells of a man who got lucky enough to catch one and forced the leprechaun to show the man where his gold was hidden. Upon finding it, he realized that he needed a shovel because it was underneath a bush. He decided to release the spirit and wrap the tree in the bush in red garland and left to go get a shovel. Upon arriving back, he found that every bush and every tree in the area that he was led to find the leprechaun's gold was wrapped in red garland. Little angry little things, aren't they?
I would say so. You tend to think these things would be happy people, but they're not, it sounds like, so far at least.
No, because would you like to know how dangerous a leprechaun is?
How dangerous can they be, Bob?
Well, their powers include, but not limited to, magic, reality warping, shape-shifting, regeneration, super strength, lightning speeds, durability, and emotion manipulation.
Bob, when we were growing up, I don't think leprechauns had all this stuff going on. Super speed, super strength.
When you look at the actual fae lore myths behind a leprechaun, that's what you get. There are these dangerous, treacherous things.
I don't know if I want to go on with the show anymore, Bob. You're already ruining it for me.
Okay. Would you like to hear a story about a potential real-life leprechaun skeleton found?
Sure.
In the year 1989, in the area surrounding the Carlingford Mountain in the countryside of Cuth, a strange discovery popped up. Some hikers found a skeleton and with very small bones and a collection of four gold coins. This discovery caused an outrage in the community, leading people to believe that this was a hoax or the real thing. Famous Fae researcher Kevin McCollite Woods believed that it was true and round up a search party to start looking for more leprechauns. Their search actually caused mass panic and amusement among the communities, and their search, well, came up short eventually. However, in 2002, Woods found more gold, which apparently gave him the ability to speak to the leader of the leprechauns, Kernag, the leader of the remaining 236 surviving leprechauns that were living in Ireland.
Okay, so the gold really gave the power right there. Communication is key. You need the gold.
Well, now you see, Colin, I found an issue with that story.
You don't think this is a real story?
No, because the issue I find here in a supernatural sense is when you're reaching out into the world of fae or spirits or sprites or whatever it is that you're looking for in the unseen world, can give off the impression of being one thing and not the other. And the story actually kept getting more and more attention that the UK actually put the leprechaun on a protected species from being hunted in 2007.
So that's a flaw right there.
What do you mean?
Well, you said you had a problem with that story.
Well, I was finishing up the thing. I was saying the problem I have is when you're communicating with spirit in the spiritual world, and you're directly opening up communication between you and whatever it is that you're looking to communicate with. The problem with that is when you open up those forms of communication, those conversation pieces, you're not exactly knowing what you're talking to on your end. Mm. Anything can show up and communicate with you pretending to be whatever it is that you're looking for to kind of give you a false sense of okayness. Does that make sense? It lets your guard down. And when you let your guard down in the world of spiritual communications, you can really open yourself up to some nasty business because there's things out there lurking in the dark that want you to take your energy away from you and take control of your body because you have the one thing that they're looking for. It's the same thing with petitioning to deities. If you're, you know, practicing in that, you know, in any sort of pagan world like that, if you're petitioning a deity and you're not direct communication with said deity, something could pretend to be that and then cause your life to be complete flux. And that's part of the problem with, you know, the average person using like something like a spirit board or like an Ouija board, is because when you're opening up communications to these things, you could say, hey, it's grandma, and it's not grandma.
Mm. Something taking over.
Pretending to be grandma.
Yes.
So that's the problem I have with this concept. So this guy finds the four gold coins, and these four gold coins gave him the ability to speak to the leprechaun leader. Now, you could just go on and say that Mr. Woods was just kind of, how do you say in a nice term, out of his mind a little bit. But if you're going to buy in that he got some sort of ability to communicate directly with these fae folk, that's what the problem therein lies.
Well, can you, in stories you hear, Bob, that leprechauns are always searching for gold. So is there a case to be made here? If you do find the gold, then that's when the leprechauns will start communicating with you. Not too far-fetched, I don't think.
No.
Oh.
And the fact that these hikers found this little skeleton, this little outfit along with it, that says something.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, according to Mr. Woods, there's only 236 living leprechauns in the year 1989.
In Ireland alone or throughout the world?
In general. There's 236.
Okay. And what year was this?
1989. But in 2007... the UK made the leprechaun a protected species.
Okay.
You can't go hunting leprechauns after the year 2007 in attempting to harm said being. They're on a protected like list.
So leprechaun hunting illegal essentially.
You can go out looking for them, but don't go out there with like pitchforks and torches and stuff. You'll be breaking the law.
But what you're saying here too earlier, it doesn't sound like any mere mortal human could be any match for a leprechaun. So why would you want to go out and risk your life?
Nah, that's, most people don't understand that, or you're me.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you do something like what I do. Now, leprechaun sightings are not only found in Ireland. There have been actual sightings in America, and there are two very popular stories of these interactions. One comes to us from Portland, Oregon. This reporter's reporter worked for the Oregon Journal and went by the name Dick Fagan. Dick would spend his days looking out his window of his second floor office and was transfixed on this hole that was supposed to be for a light pole. As he became more and more transfixed on this light pole hole that never got the light pole, he decided to go outside and say, well, I'm tired of looking at this eyesore, and he decided to start planting flowers out there. And started writing in his column, Mill's End, about the leprechaun sightings there. So he called this hole Mill's End, and it was all about, you know, these leprechaun sightings he would find in this bizarre, you know, light pole area.
Yeah.
He actually named the main leprechaun, and that leprechaun's name was Patrick O'Toole, and that he was the leader and spoke directly to Dick. During time as he was writing in this column, the mayor of Portland actually set out an 11 p.m. curfew that was set by the city. Patrick was so angry and so upset that the mayor decided to put a curfew out, especially on that little area where Dick planted the flowers, that Patrick supposedly threatened the mayor, and the mayor ended up going public, saying that scared him, and actually called off the curfew. The area around the flowers was dedicated as park in 1948, and, fun fact, is the world's smallest park, coming in at only 2 square feet. The site has been around for a very long time and has been moved around a little bit based on, you know, needing construction and whatnot. But every year around St. Patrick's Day, there are many festivities that go around since its dedication. And you can go there and there's, you know, fey hunters that go out there and, you know, supernatural folk and people that just really like the concept of St. Patrick's Day and celebrate their Irish heritage. They'll go out there and they'll take a picture, but yeah. It's kind of fun. It's literally just this 2 foot square of concrete with like a little flower bed, and it was dedicated in the memory of Patrick O'Toole and Dick Fagan, the reporter.
And where is this located?
Portland, Oregon.
Oh, we're not that far from that. We should take a visit there, Bob.
I would love to. Yeah, post-pandemic. I've always wanted to see Portland, so that's when I'm there, I would definitely like to see Mill's End.
Beautiful this time of year, I hear.
It's probably cold.
Yeah, cold too.
So. Yeah. After the pandemic, Portland, we're going to come see Mill's End, the 2 feet square park that's actually a city park, which is inhabited by leprechauns, apparently.
Now, out of the 236 leprechauns out there?
236.
How many do you think are in Portland right now?
I don't know. Okay. We only know Patrick O'Toole, so.
Yeah. But you never know. Some might go out because of his memory out there and maybe take residence over there, so.
It's possible.
Something worth checking
out.
Well,
in the world of leprechauns, you know, they do teleport and they go between, you know, dimensions and pockets of reality to get from point A to point B very much, you know, much faster, going through the green, if you will.
Mm.
And I know our fans at home are sitting around waiting for me to speak of this.
What's that, Bob?
There is another widely popular leprechaun sighting in America.
Okay, let me see. Leprechaun sighting in America.
That's not Portland, Oregon.
Not Portland. Not Chicago.
No.
Miami?
You've got the right letter. This leprechaun sighting I'm speaking of is the Mobile, Alabama leprechaun.
That again, Bob?
The Bob After Dark greatest, greatest inside joke amongst the team here at Bob After Dark. Of all time. I play that video for everybody that comes to the house and checks things out or, you know, wants to learn about the paranormal. It's a good story to teach people about how the paranormal can cause mass hysteria, because that's exactly what that story entailed. because it could have just been a crackhead in a tree.
Well, it could have very well been Bob. And so back us up here. What is this? For people that I know want to see the video, but what's this all about now? There's a leprechaun sighting.
There was a leprechaun sighting in, of all places, Mobile, Alabama. And it caused mass panic, and people were going out there looking for this leprechaun. The news captured all kinds of interesting characters that were hunting these things around and looking for them, including one gentleman who had a 1,000-year-old flute passed on from generation to generation. Oh, Anthony, I wish you were here, because he'd be laughing hysterically right now.
What did it look like, Bob?
There's an amateur sketch available.
That one right there?
I am so glad you decided to bring that up on my teleprompter.
So that's the sketch, Bob.
That's the sketch of what was found in Mobile, Alabama.
You know what? Looks familiar, Bob. Looks very familiar.
Anybody see a leprechaun, say yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That story is absolutely ridiculous.
Well, you figured...
I traveled all over the country for Bob After Dark, and I've talked panels, conventions, etc., and I've had communication with fans, and they're always like, oh, what's your favorite paranormal story? And it's like, oh, you know, Mothman's my number one, obviously, and Loveland Frog, but a good story that draws correlation between, you know, what's paranormal and what's not. It's the Mobile, Alabama leprechaun story, because it legitimately caused mass panic without people knowing and looking into things and trying to figure out what it is. They just assumed there was a leprechaun, and people were going crazy. There were crowds of people out there. This was years ago, and they were looking for this leprechaun. And the news report became somewhat of a meme in the paranormal world, because we all kind of got a laugh out of it, but the 1,000-year-old flute, man. That's what I hear is what you're supposed to do to take down these things.
That's what I heard as well. And you got to think, if you're the artist sketching this thing, that's not bad. I mean, they say he's wearing a hat, possibly.
There is merch of that thing.
Of course.
You can go online and buy a Mobile, Alabama leprechaun shirt, Mobile, Alabama leprechaun, like, notebooks and stuff with that image on it. My particular favorite is whenever the merch has the lines drawn through it, like it's actually on loose leaf paper.
What was the conclusion of that? Did they ever figure out what was going
on?
They
did. It was was it Tosh.0? I'm going with Tosh.0, and I could be wrong. On Tosh.0, a comedian came out and said that it was a publicity stunt. He actually went up into the tree for them to shoot videos, some viral thing that they were trying to do, like a viral campaign.
Yeah.
And somebody saw it, and they didn't know it was going to be a viral campaign, and they thought there was a legitimate leprechaun. But no, there was a guy who came out, and he had, like, the images of him up in the tree and the whole bit, and he ended up, you know, debunking everything and saying that, yeah, he was the Mobile, Alabama leprechaun.
That's good to have some closure, but it's kind of too bad, too, because you want that to kind of remain a mystery, stuff like that. Was there really a leprechaun up there in Mobile, Alabama, or was it just, you know, as they said, crackhead?
You know, moving on. As I was saying, leprechauns are said to be extremely dangerous. There are many stories relating to the ways that these things can be, including getting people drunk only to kidnap them, or stealing newborns and replacing them with changelings. They will enter a home and throw around furniture if no offerings are left, and will steal sheep.
No, sheep, okay. Why sheep?
That's just people herd sheep.
Oh, okay.
The Ireland area,
sense.
So they'll steal your sheep. So you know the idea is if you catch if you know there's a leprechaun in the area, you're supposed to leave out like a bowl of cream or an offering, like some bread, like you would normal fey stuff.
Bread and cream.
Yeah,
interesting. What's the story behind that?
It's just you know that's what you have, so you offer it up as an offering. If you are lucky enough to actually be in within... Oh, we have a caller, so let me put a pin in that real quick and count. Just pass him straight on
over.
Put
a pin in that, Bob, because we got Jack on the line here.
Jack, you're on the line. Hello. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
Hey, guys. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone. How are you?
Doing good, Jack. What's on your mind tonight, pal?
Hey, I got a couple of leprechaun sightings, if you care to hear them.
I swear to God, Jack, if you tell me about Mobile, I already did it. See, Jack's in the paranormal community, and that laugh is genuine.
amongst other paranormal enthusiasts and, you know, careerists, etc. That is the one of the greatest paranormal stories of all time, is it not?
It is.
It really is. We laugh, but it's a good like psychology piece to learn how people react to these things.
You know, plot twist. It turns out to be real in the future.
That comedian was told to go there and say that because it didn't want to give away the leprechaun.
No, he was the leprechaun. He was the real leprechaun.
Oh boy! So you actually have more sightings. Let's hear about them.
Yeah. So there was this. I have a couple of notes here. There was this individual where it was a guy. He had a stepfather, and his stepfather, you know, he never really got along with him, and. This was actually last year, and his stepfather eventually passed away. And you know, the guy, he's now, you know, a grown man, and is married. He's married, and he was talking to his wife about, like, you know, his childhood and growing up with his stepfather. And his stepfather was from Ireland. He came to America, you know, back when the guy was a lot younger, and so he was talking all evening, he said, to his wife about, you know, what he went through with his stepfather. And he noticed he was just, like, rambling on and on. Eventually, you know, it got late, they went to bed, and he said that he woke up, and he says that he was sure that he was fully awake and not sleeping. And he sees this little being come out from the darkness, and it was dressed all in black, so not green, but it was dressed all in black, and it was like a, you know, a short, you know, little man with a black suit, and he described it as like an old-time suit, and he said that it was speaking to him, but he couldn't hear the being speak. He could only see the mouth moving. And he had, like, this twisted, angry face. And he had this prominent, you know, orange, curly facial hair, sideburns. And the creature lifted the stick up in the air like it was going to hit him. But before it did, it disappeared. Now, it's really interesting because, you know, even if this didn't actually take place, and he swears it did, it's interesting how our minds work, you know, how we can potentially create things. You know, what if his mind created this being because of these unresolved issues that he had that came out that night when speaking to his wife? You know, perhaps that is what a lot of these fae folk are. They're you know, these psychological projections. And that's not even necessarily to say that they're not real. They are real, but as, you know, psychologist Carl Jung said about UFOs, that they are both external powers and colliding with these, with our internal internal ability to project things, you know. So, you know, perhaps that's what this sighting was right here of this leprechaun. There's also a couple different modern day leprechaun sightings of leprechauns appearing in people's room and sitting or dancing on their chest. And it's really interesting. I actually know someone in my own family. When I was a kid, they used to tell me this. They used to tell me that there was a little man that would come out of their closets and, you know, start dancing or beckoning them into their closets. And then eventually that they would disappear. And I found other similar stories. So I'm really fascinated by this. Because obviously when I was a kid, you know, like I would think that they would say it to scare me. But even as I got older, they were like, no, that was true. I don't know if I still believe it, but, like, it's really interesting that there are other stories like this. So those are my leprechaun sightings.
Huh.
Leprechauns, Bob.
Yeah.
You know, so Jack, if I can pitch two theories to you, and I'm serious here. Because you were saying dancing on the chest, and that really struck out to me, because when you know, you wake up from a night terror, you sometimes feel like something's pressing on your chest or pushing on your chest to, you know, what have you. Do you think that leprechaun sighting was just a night terror waking up from?
Yeah, you know, it definitely could be, because the first guy, you know, what he described was he was able to see the mouth moving but not hear it. You know, what if it was, you know, these people were experiencing night terrors, and, you know, they formed, you know, something concrete, you know, but it was actually in their head. I don't know, you know.
And that would have been my second theory. If they're creating them in their head, do you believe that these leprechaun sightings are potentially tulpas?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at, that it could be tulpas, you know, because obviously, you know, as you were reading, and if you look at mythology, leprechauns, you know, will be seen in broad daylight and having all sorts of different powers and stuff. So, no, I don't think that they're all night terrors, but, you know, probably, you know, modern man is creating these tulpas because of what they've read when they were younger.
Since I got you on the phone, I could ask you one more question before I let you go. Do you think there's any significance to these 236 surviving leprechauns left in Ireland, according to Mr. Woods, or do you think that's just some malarkey?
Sorry, a little malarkey.
You've heard this before, I'm assuming, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. No. And he had the four coins that helped him speak to Carriage, the king of the leprechauns.
Yeah, I don't know about that, Bob.
You know, I'm buying a story. No one else is going to believe him. Someone's got to believe him. I'll believe him. Mr. Woods, I don't know if he is he still alive? Do you know, Jack?
I don't know, to be honest.
Okay, well, he was the leading expert in the Fae world, so it's very possible.
Can I share one more story with you?
Look, you could share it. Why not? I only slept 2 hours. Let's just keep going, Jack.
All right. I don't sleep at all. So there you go. So it is an Irish creature story. It's not a leprechaun, but in the spirit of St. Patrick's Day. I actually interviewed this woman 2 years ago. Her name is Kim. She lives in Alabama. And she was telling me about a story of a few years back of how she was sleeping in her bed one night and she heard this screech outside. She looks, there's nothing in there. I mean, nothing out there. And so she tries to go back to bed and she keeps hearing this like this screech, like this shriek, and it was like blood curdling. And she was scared, you know, and she kept looking outside and there was nothing there. And the next day, her grandfather passed away, and she didn't know what the connection was, right? So I'm thinking, I'm over here like trying to put it together, and I go, do you happen to be Irish, your family? And she goes, yeah, we're, you know, my family comes from Ireland, and we moved here, you know, some time back. And I go,
Banshee sighting.
I don't know if you're familiar with a banshee, but
yeah, definitely a banshee sighting. That sounds like a true to life banshee sighting to me.
And when I said that to her, she stopped. She goes, you know, I've never even thought about that before. She goes, I know of banshees. I've never read into them or anything. And she's like, you just scared the heck out of me right now. And I go,
good job, Jack. You're scaring your interviewees, man.
I know, I'm feeling my witness over here. And I go, no, that's not what I was trying to do. I'm so sorry. And she goes, no, I'm going to be thinking about this for weeks. Like, that's fascinating. So yeah, that's, you know, that's my banshee story.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Jack. As always, we appreciate you calling in and keeping me up at night when I want to go to bed.
Yes, for sure.
A full-on jest, guys. I love Jack. Love him calling in and sharing stuff, because at the end of the day, I might know a ton of everything there is to know about the paranormal. Jack will always know one step ahead of me. He's a true historian when it comes to this stuff and a master of his craft. So thanks for calling in, Jack.
I look forward to your show every week, man.
Thank you. Care, you have a good one.
How about that?
So Jack might be a leprechaun himself.
We never asked him directly about that, I guess.
No, I didn't think to ask him that.
You think he's the king of the leprechauns?
He might be this Carriage guy.
Might be.
Might be. And that's, he's just throwing us off his...
I was going to say, he laughed that story off pretty quickly, don't you think?
Jack, are you a leprechaun? Huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Are you?
Let's move on, shall we? Okay, so Count, if you are lucky enough to actually catch yourself a leprechaun,
yes,
you might be lucky enough to get one of their objects. That's the main way of you catching one.
Okay.
So if it's possible for you, it's possible for you to capture one, if you're lucky enough to steal or find like a leprechaun's magic ring, one of their coins or one of their amulets, they will appear before you and try to barter with you it back. Now, much like the genie or the djinn, they will grant you 3 wishes if you give it back to them.
Hmm.
Now, first, these wishes will and possibly may come true, but quickly will turn bad. Do not, if you ever come across a leprechaun, do not barter with these things. Do not grant your wishes. Do not ask for them, because you'll find out it'll be like a monkey's paw of bad deeds. All right. I always try to teach you guys how to defend yourself against these things. Always. 100%, 1,000,000%, 1,000%. Always want to teach you guys how to defend yourself against the things I talk about. Now, leprechauns do actually have weaknesses, if you're lucky enough to come in contact with one, and you anger it enough, and you survive its magic onslaught. There are ways to defend yourself. My advice, don't go after trying to capture the leprechaun's magic coin, amulet, gold, ring.
No.
Don't go looking for those objects, because it's going to appear, and you're going to ask for... You might ask it for a lot of gold, and then you yourself turn into like a gold statue or something. That's the monkey's paw effect when it comes to wishes. That's a Bob After Dark term right there. What do you know about monkey paws?
I don't know too much, I'll be honest with you.
Simpsons Treehouse of Horrors, man. Watch it. It'll teach you a little something about life. Anyway. One. If you can find yourself a 4-leaf clover, it's like garlic to a vampire. If you find a 4-leaf clover, you can use it as a warding
mechanism
to ward off leprechaun.
Because usually people think that those two go hand in hand, that the leprechaun...
What did I tell you at the beginning of the episode?
What?
That there's no... That these aren't the cereal chasing
the Lucky
type.
Charms.
No, it's a symbol of good luck, and it's a symbol of power, because you put power into the 4-leaf clover being a lucky object.
Okay.
So you're it's just like using a crucifix or something like that to ward off a vampire. You yourself are putting the power into that object.
Interesting.
So it's the will of this 4-leaf clover is going to ward off a leprechaun.
Now, where do I get a 4-leaf clover? Because those are rare.
They're very rare.
So where do I get one?
Better find one.
Pretty quickly, too, I would say.
Two, you could be like Bob and find yourself some cold iron that can dispel it.
Cold iron?
Cold iron. Do you know I sleep with a crowbar at night?
It's good to know about
that. True story. It's not in bed with me, but it is next to my bed.
All right.
I'm not lying to you.
So is that because of leprechauns?
That's for fae.
So not intruders, just...
the true intruders have their own thing. We're not going into that. We're not going into that.
Other cold iron.
But the cold iron is, you use that in order to dispel the fae.
Now...
Because fae don't follow the same rules we do.
Now, with the iron, it has to be cold.
Cold iron will dispel it.
Not high iron, hot iron.
No.
No.
Don't ask me why it needs to be cold, but cold iron will dispel it.
All right. So keep a crowbar in the freezer and you'll be good.
Room temperature crowbar? I didn't think about that. Now it's going to keep me up at night. Will the room temperature crowbar have the same effect as cold crowbar?
I get it's cold.
I mean, I prefer room temperature water, so I mean... I mean, I prefer that.
Keep it next to the Hot Pockets.
No, don't keep it next to the Hot Pockets, because what if you warm up the Hot Pockets? Then you're going to have hot iron, and you're not going to do anything.
Depends where you are.
It's not like you could plug in your mom's like iron she left you to make sure you're ironing your pants.
Well, I meant more so the freezer when you
take
them out.
You don't want to plug that in and use it and start swinging around, because it ain't going to work.
I guess so.
So don't use hot iron. Are you still there? Oh, we're getting a phone call at 10:21 at night. Okay, we'll take the call. Gosh, I'm sleepy, guys.
How about this? You know, usually Jack is the last caller, but we got Ian on the line today. Ian.
Ian, you're on the air. What's going? What's on your mind tonight? Where are you calling
from?
Hi, where are you calling from?
Springfield, Illinois.
Well, hi, Ian from Springfield, Illinois. What's on your mind tonight?
You made the joke about cold iron. It's actually the forging process.
Oh.
We actually get a science lesson here.
All right.
I'm not 100% sure how the forging process is different, but the way that it's forged, the way that the item is designed in the iron makes it cold. It's not the temperature itself, but it is how the iron is processed and designed into whatever it is that you're using.
What if Steve knew that? I don't know. He likes science.
Science and forging are two different things. I don't see Steve hanging out in a volcano making like Mjolnir or something.
I don't know. Maybe.
Well, Ian, thanks for sharing that knowledge with me. I appreciate that.
Hey, no problem. It's great watching you. And I can't wait for next week.
Thank you so much.
Cold iron.
Cold iron apparently is what you use to ward off the leprechauns. I use a crowbar myself.
Crowbar. Okay. Crowbar. Well, either one works, I guess.
Well, crowbar's a good, malleable weapon in general. You could use that to swing
and easier to find than a four-leaf clover, too.
Yes, you can go to your local Menards, and then when you buy a crowbar, and they're like, "Oh, you're lifting up some nails, fey hunting, or face self-defense."
You should keep one on you too at all.
That was going to be a crazy person. Hard enough to explain. Why is there a crowbar in your room? Fairies?
You never know, Bob. You never know.
Listen, man, fae scare me. True story. They, out of everything we talk about on the show, demons and stuff, fae are up there in things that scare me. Because like I was saying, they don't abide by our rules. You can't, things like vampires and stuff in our physical realm you can ward against, right? Garlic or whatever. Fae don't do that. Fae don't have those rule sets. You can't just make yourself, find yourself your local coven, give your best to them, and have them draw up a sigil to ward against Fae. It don't work like that. Our magics don't work against them. It's bad news bears. So if you're dealing with one, you gotta kind of think on your feet.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and three, if you feed the leprechaun cream, it will act like a super booze for them. So cream will act like, you give cream to a leprechaun, it'll be like giving an entire bottle of vodka to you, Count Panic. Yeah. Knock you out and make you drunk as can be.
So cream is how
cream, if you can give them some cream, one, they're going to love you. Two, you're going to make them really, really drunk.
So do you hit him with the crowbar after that or no?
Listen, man, you gotta have a series. You gotta have some steps to this process.
Okay. All right.
No, I don't sleep with cream next to my bed.
Well, cream seems like a nice offering because, crowbar is so violent. The four-leaf clover may be a little violent for them. But the cream, that's like a little offering to them. They could actually be happy with some.
And that's the thing. If you, not all leprechaun stories are bad. Yes, no. They can go bad very fast. But if you can attract one and leave a good offerings, the leprechaun might bring you some luck.
Pot of gold.
Pot of they don't give that up very easy.
Okay. Lucky charms.
Four. If you're lucky enough to meet a leprechaun at a pub, you could challenge them to a drinking contest.
Really?
Yes. They will take this as a challenge. They like to drink.
All right, so at the pub, are they drinking just regular spirits or are they drinking cream?
No, they're drinking regular booze.
Okay.
So cream's like a treat.
The treat.
It's a treat.
But they can get drunk off regular alcohol.
Regular alcohol, but they will take you to a drinking challenge.
Now, how are they with drinking? Do we know?
Nobody's ever survived a drinking challenge with a leprechaun.
All right, so you're not going to win that one.
That explains Ghostbusters, but.
Oh, yeah. But chances are, if you challenge a drinking competition, it's not going to end well for you.
No.
Okay.
That's... And the final thing, you can challenge a leprechaun to hand-to-hand combat, fisticuffs, fist fight, Chicago street fight.
Really?
Yeah. You challenge one. They will accept happily because a leprechaun loves to fight. All magic aside, the leprechaun will move, make its form grow to match your size, and you can go toe-to-toe with them in a slugfest.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Bob. I thought maybe fighting a leprechaun would be easy, but you mentioned at the beginning of the segment here, leprechauns have all these powers and super strength, and you're saying the leprechaun could actually morph into a full-sized person.
Warps reality. Interesting. But they won't use their magic in a fist fight. To them, that's sacred. Fist fight is, you know, mano a mano.
So do their muscles grow as well in a fight? Like, they get all buff?
They do, yeah. That's the thing.
Dang.
And they'll just, they're ready. They're like, oh, yeah, come on.
Not a good option either, Bob.
No. So advice, keep the crowbar.
Keep the crowbar. And before they get to full size, too, possibly. Probably best to hit them right then.
All right. You ready for one more leprechaun fact before we call it a night?
Hit me with it.
There are no depictions of female leprechaun proper in legends.
Interesting.
The idea is that one theory is that leprechauns are actually the bastard children of other fae. So discarded children that the fae create end up becoming leprechauns, and they only discard like the rough males or the what they would consider like the useless males.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep.
Well, you know, Bob, as time goes on here, there might be maybe a male leprechaun, female leprechaun might be a good source of maybe calming that leprechaun down a little bit.
Very much so.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they're so angry all the time.
I have one more word to close up before we get your final words of the evening. Anybody see a leprechaun? Say yeah!
Yeah! Get that
I pop somebody. Absolutely.
Somebody like
all right,
that.
Kyle, let's get your final words.
Bob, great episode once again. And for everybody.
I don't know how I made it through this. I am so
listening
tired.
Listening and watching. Have a great St. Patrick's Day tomorrow. Don't drink too much cream and be careful out there if you're at the pub. Watch out for those leprechauns. Don't challenge them to a fight.
Folks, thank you so much for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of Count Panic and myself and the entire Bob After Dark team, we just want to wish you guys, if you celebrate it, a happy St. Patrick's Day. Careful who you drink with. You never know who might be sitting next to you. Mm-hmm. And remember to practice your social distancing, folks. We're not out of the woods yet. To my mom and dad, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are... not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.